Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. Kevin and I are honored to welcome the voice of the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, Jack Michaels, to the show. Jack, thanks for joining us again.
Well, guys, just hearing your voices tells me that we're almost ready for baseball to begin. Great to be on with you guys and talking about American Association Baseball and, of course, my favorite subject, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks.
Well, let's start there, Jack. You're coming off a championship season, obviously an exciting time there in Fargo. Tell us what your thoughts are about the motivation for this team coming out of the championship season, trying to repeat this year.
You know, it's funny because having been with the Redhawks since the start in 96, and I was thinking about all the times the year after they had won, at that time, a Northern League championship. You know, what was, you know, in 1999, what were the expectations, you know, after that tremendous 1998? You know, they subsequently went on to win five, but, you know, I'm trying to think the year after that, nobody was, like, resting on their laurels because, you know, players came, players, you know, left. You didn't have the exact same roster. So in this league, as you know, everything seems to be a little different. And then this year, this past week, I come in as the guys were coming into Fargo and into the stadium and into the locker room, and I'm thinking, oh, there's Kevin McGovern. Hey, Kev, good to see you. Oh, there's Evan Alexander. Big hug. Hey, John Silviano. Oh, you did stay in Fargo. Hey, good to see you. And every time I'm seeing, like, hey, wait a minute. These guys all played last year. You know, they brought back so many guys that have signed for the 2023 season. It is just like almost like when I do college sports of underclassmen, it's like you just expect them to be back the next year. So that's really the good side, guys, is that a lot of those familiar names are on the 2023 roster for now anyway. And it, I think for fans and myself and everybody, you're just kind of hoping for another good season and be in a spot to do what they did last year.
Well, a few weeks ago, a person with not very much intelligence was pointing out that it didn't look like any team in the American Association was going to dominate over any of the other ones, but he looks like he's been thoroughly corrected by the signings you've had recently. You've got to feel like this is easily the team to beat right now.
Yeah, if Jack Michaels had a wish list of just, let's start with the offensive side, the lineup, the position players, and if he had a wish list from last year's squad to be back, and I think I would have sat down at night and thought, boy, it'd be nice to have Manny Boscan back, and Sam Dexter, what he did in the postseason was crazy, and, you know, Leo Pena, boy, is Leo going to be back? He's been a solid performer, you know. And then what you realize is they got those guys back, you know, and they have Evan Alexander back, and Alec Olin, who proved a great spot, and John Silviano, who tore the, you know, cover off the ball until he got injured late in the season. You know, so that's, you know, then you mix in that guys, you know, Nick Novak, who just comes through with the, you know, clutch hits in a game where you can plug him in anywhere. And, you know, Ben Lavorsi, who they used coming out of Mankato, a college kid that, you know, in his first pro debut, we just started getting on base and proved a worthy guy. So, yeah, to your point, I think, yeah, no team loaded. We've seen a lot of guys signed. And going back to affiliated bowls, so some teams have had to scramble or at least try to replace people. The Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, not one of them, Rob and Kev. The Redhawks were able to actually reload with their players, and then they didn't stop there, as you know.
Oh, no.
Dylan Thomas. Let's talk about him for a minute, Jack. Guy who had phenomenal seasons with Texas 4 years ago, goes to play Major League Baseball, coming back. To be honest with you, I just thought, man, how you guys figured out how to get him under the salary cap, I thought, this guy really came to just play baseball.
Right. And in a couple of different Major League organizations, as you know, and of course, there's a tie there, and that tie is with Carell Prime, a couple of former Rockies organizational guys, and, you know, an insider tell me that if Dylan Thomas was not going to be an affiliated ball or on a major league roster like he was last year on a team, if he was going to play indie ball, it was probably going to be somewhere where his old buddy and old roommate Carell Prime played. And, well, as you know, in the offseason, the Redhawks made one of those deals with Milwaukee that sent a star player to Milwaukee and got a star player in return. So it's interesting how that worked out, having Dylan Thomas be a Redhawk and reunited with an old partner and then roomie of his in the Rockies organization in Carell Pride.
So that turned out to be a pretty lopsided trade when you think about it.
Are you almost looking at that as a two-for-one? Is that what you're doing? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of the deal. All I know is it's really good to watch Dylan Thomas swing a bat and play the field.
And I think one of the biggest differences for this team, Jack, is going to be the loss of Christian Correa, probably the best defensive catcher and a guy calling games for the American Association had over the last few seasons. How do you see this group, especially a young guy like Ben Lavorsi, filling in and doing the job behind the plate?
Yeah, good question. And Ben is such a solid ball player. He's a good guy. The quality at bats he'll give him and his abilities continue as a catcher. We'll see that grow. But you're right. Christian Correa was such a good backstop leader, handled pitchers so well. In fact, if you guys remember Game 5 of the American Association, the Miles Wolf Cup Finals, you know, Chris Coast had to make a decision. You know, that game went into extra innings, and now you've got Christian Correa on second base and Leopoldo Pini at the plate. Chris Coast had to make a decision. If do I put in someone with more speed in case we need this, or do I keep Christian in knowing we may not score on a base hit, but if this goes another inning, I'm going to need my main catcher behind the plate, and that's what he was forced with. Well, we all know how that ended. You know, Leo got that hit up the middle. You know, Christian was able to score. And then Christian, you know, steps away, and now we've got, situation to catcher. Well, Red Hawks making a deal to grab B.J. Lopez, an accomplished defensive catcher, and remember him in Kane County the last couple of years. So BJ is that guy behind the plate, and he and Ben will share duties. So the Red Hawks saw that situation, addressed it, and I think they'll be just fine.
I'm going to be pretty interested to see what kind of numbers BJ Lopez can put up playing half his game at Newman Outdoor Field instead of the Cavernous Northwest Medicine Field, because I felt like he had a little bit of pop in his bat, but I think playing in a pitcher's park half the time held him down a bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you look at the difference in the stadiums, and Newman plays, obviously doesn't play deep down the lines, but you guys know, Rob, you know that plays like Amen Alley out there in left center. You know, 399, one of the deeper gaps in ballparks in the American Association. So, but let's go back to what you need B.J. Lopez to be for the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. And I think that is answered. They just need him to be a good receiver, work with a good pitching staff, some still very young, you know, and then contribute what you will, because we first started talking about this lineup. And if you're an opposing pitcher that's got to run through an Evan Alexander and a Manny Boscan and a John Silviano and a Carell Prime and a Leopoldo Pena, my goodness gracious, you know, are you really asking B.J. Lopez to come in and hit, you know, 15 bombs and drive in 70? I don't know if you're doing that. So that, I guess, is the other side of that.
An interesting question this season, Jack, and I felt bad that I didn't ask him this when he was on our show a couple months ago, is with Chris Coast looking like the back is feeling better here and he'll be involved more with the team out on the road more, what's the role between Anthony Renz and Chris Coast this season? What happens with Anthony Renz in terms of calling games or whatever this year?
Yeah, those two are two peas in a pod, as you know. They not only combine together with the Red Hawks, they do it at Concordia College, or at least this year it'll be the final. Chris is stepping down from his role as the head coach of Concordia. And hopefully Anthony gets that job, by the way. So that role doesn't change. Chris is feeling better. He looks better. He's that's so crazy. We just didn't know what it was that was ailing that back, and it's tough to see. First of all, one of your very good friends having to go through that, but secondly, you know, just watching him try to swallow that pain, and we just don't know what pain he was going through with that back. But now seems to be a little bit better. Situation. He's feeling better, and he and Anthony are two peas in a pod that work so well together. So those are two guys that work well together. There's no problem. There's no question about it. They share the same brain, I think, half the time. And, you know, you couple that with Jeff Vinegar, who puts the teams together. And, you know, Robbie Lopez has been here some 20-plus years as a bullpen catcher. And you sprinkle in Kevin McGovern, who is a veteran's veteran. And that's, you know, really, that is the reason. Outside, of course, players make you win. But that's really the reason, I think, that the Red Hawks are such a good club. They have just that staff that all gets together, that all contributes. And there is just no argument. There's no disagreements. If there are, it's baseball disagreements. They're buddies and they're friends first and foremost. And so there's really, you know, Wrens and Coast, they are built out of the same cloth. And it's all about trying to put the Red Hawks in a position to win games.
You know, Jack, they say that nobody beats Father Time, but I'm wondering if Kevin McGovern is going to be the first. What kind of season are you expecting out of him coming back here?
I was just sitting with him yesterday and looking at him going like, almost forgetting that he's, you know, still playing, like he's still pitching. And you know, he is, he looks great. He's talking about, you know, his goals and what he wants to accomplish and how he wants to lead by example and show the young guys, you know, all of this stuff that Kevin has done his whole life of trying to, you know, lead by example. And he looks good. He looks like he's still 22 years old and like he's out of, I just don't get it. Rob, Kevin, I don't know what he's drinking or eating, whether it's wakes up in the morning and drinks a raw egg and then has a bowl of celery at noon and a potato at 7. I don't know what it is. I wish I knew, because I certainly would get the same thing.
You know, speaking of the starting staff, you and I both saw it underneath the flea market canopy at Lake Country. I felt like it was Tyler Grauer's coming out party that night, where Grauer was new to the rotation and just mowed down the Dockhounds, and it just seemed like he just took off from there. Talk a bit about what you're expecting out of Tyler Grauer this year.
It is a great call, and you're right. I remember that too. And I think when you've got a young pitcher that has great stuff, as he does, you still need to see that translate in the pro game on the field. And I think until that does, only then is when you start seeing the growth, and then that growth can be exponential. And Tyler Grauer, I think, is the case for that. He gets a couple of good outings, at least one. You talk about the game in Lake. You get one, and then you saw that maturity, and then he backs that up with some big games at home. And then by the time they're at Red Hawks in the postseason, and he's facing, you know, the Winnipegs and the Kansas Cities of the world and Milwaukee's, and all of a sudden he's turned into a grown man overnight. And you're right. I think it took a game to get it going, and I expect a lot of that same stuff with Grauer this year.
If there is any concern about this team right now, look at Jack. He was that 7th and 8th inning last season, getting to Alex aboard. Do you feel like that's a spot that's going to still need to be worked out, or are you feeling pretty confident about the group that's going to be filling that role?
And I'm sorry, I missed the guy. At what spot?
The 7th and 8th spot and that pitching staff. You know, 7th and 8th innings in that pitching staff.
Yeah, you're right. In that late inning stuff, and we'll see where Alex DuBord is. I know that Alex, you know, we just don't know how much pain he was in. You know, our athletic trainer probably does. But at the end of last year, and, you know, he was battling. And, that, you know, remember, he threw a 3-inning game in relief. Against 3 innings on probably pure adrenaline that we just don't know the pain that, but at that point, who cares? So we'll see where he is at the start of the season. So that's your back end. And then if you know, if he's not, you know, 100%, I doubt the Red Hawks are going to roll the dice with that. So now you're talking about maybe a Reed Burlingmeier, who was built like Kevin Lukow when he was 22 years old, like he's been eating spinach his whole life. Reed Burlingmeier, I hugged him the other day, and it was like hugging a bank building. He's just a barrel of he's actually gotten stronger, and I didn't think that was humanly possible. So my guess is the Red Hawks will probably utilize him late. Tanner Riley has got a lot of swing and miss stuff. He looks like a kid from Texas that caught a tornado in his right arm and decided to throw it a couple of times. So my guess is you'll see guys like Tanner Riley in that spot, set up, if not maybe even come in and close, you know, a little bit. You know, the Red Hawks added, you know, Ozzie Hernandez, who is such a great prospect in the Padres organization, but, you know, they utilize him in the rotation. You know, your rotation is still, you know, you're looking at Grauer, you know, and Davis Feldman, you know, Kevin McGovern, you know, does Ozzie Hernandez go in that rotation? Does Carell Prime, you know, get some time on the hill? You know, I would not be shocked if Carell Prime starts some games for the Red Hawks this year.
Oh, wow.
That'd be the story of the year.
So just I'm throwing that out there now only because it's you guys. You're like the TMZ of baseball. So there you go.
You know, one of those guys you mentioned, Davis Feldman, I felt like he had an interesting role with the team last year. It seemed like he was effective in the rotation, but he also provided some valuable innings in the bullpen.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I don't have the stats in front of me, but if he appeared in, say, the games he appeared in, I think probably a split of like a 60-40 percentile split or 70-30 start versus relief. And Feldy, but that's the kind of guy Davis is. You know, he's, first of all, a bulldog. I just bumped into him the other day, and I said, hey, I remember calling a basketball game at Eastern Michigan where he went to school in Ypsilanti. It was my first trip to Ypsilanti. And Feldy is such a mean potatoes guy that I think whatever Chris Coase asks of him or Kevin McGovern or Anthony to start or utilize him out of the bullpen to get, you know, two outs or five outs, and he's willing to do that. But, boy, when Davis Feldman is on, he is so impressive. And I think the biggest thing about last year's rotation into the bullpen, into the closer, is how one complements another. And I think all those starters just complement each other. You know, McGovern's, you know, a southpaw that's got a little, you know, that's a thinking man's pitcher. He's good about missing barrels, the veteranness of him. He knows what to throw. He and Correa work so well together, which is what B.J. Lopez and Ben are going to have to do this year. You know, and then you go to Feldman. I'm going to come right at you. I'm going to hammer it. I'm going to throw it right down through your throat, and then I'm going to spin it up, but I'm going to come at you, and I'm going to keep coming at you. And if you get a hit, I'm going to come at you again. And if you crowd the plate, I'm going to move you back, and I'm going to keep coming at you. That's Davis Feldman. You know, then you got guys like Peyton Wigginson, you know, getting wiggy with it. Kind of got that long, thin Ichabod Crane, you know, lefty that spinning balls up there, durable kind of guy. You know, I think everybody compliments each other. Tyler Grauer, the big sycamore we talked about, is more of that bulldog mentality that keeps coming. I just love the way that the staff was assembled and how everybody compliments each other. And then, you know, but the closer role still, you know, it's DuBord's obviously, but, you know, hopefully Alex is 100%. And if he's not, isn't, you know, and I doubt they would rush him back if he isn't 100% going into the year.
Well, Jack, before we jump into our final question here, if fans want to listen to you out there, how do they listen to Jack Michaels broadcast?
So thanks for asking. Hopefully Marge is busy tracking them down, and you can catch that. And as I say, watch it on the radio on AM 740 The Fan, which is the fifth largest daytime signal in the country, thank you. Or you can go to 740thefan.com or hit the listen live. Or you can download free that mobile app. It's nice American red, white, and blue, 740 The Fan, and you can do it that way. Or, of course, aabaseball.tv and so on and so forth. But thanks for letting me plug that today.
Of course. And, Jack, let's end with this. When the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks are holding the Miles Wolf Cup trophy over their heads again, what happened to make that occur?
If the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks in September of 2023 are popping champagne on the field again, what will have happened throughout the course of the summer is that they were able to keep their roster intact throughout June, July, and August, and for that matter, May. I would say that if they're hoisting that trophy again, I would not be on your show talking about how we lost this guy to injury or that guy pulled this, or this guy did that, and I think that's for any team. And I'll tell you this, it's not the Boscans and Pena's and Dylan Thomas's and John Silviano's or Carell Prime's. If the Red Hawks were to win the Cup again back-to-back, it would be a little bit of how they did it last year. They got those stars to be stars, but it's Sam Dexter again coming up large like he did. It's Evan Alexander rising above. It's Alec Olin providing just spark after spark after spark. It's those other guys that we don't talk enough about, I think, that would be the reason why the Red Hawks were to win it. And then that young pitching staff, boys, that Grauer, these guys are all fetuses. You know, they're puppies still. They're early 20s. You know, I know I'm getting older. We're all getting older. I mean, my goodness, I look at the years they were born, and I was like 3 years deep into calling Red Hawks baseball. It's the maturity of the young arms that can either duplicate or even stack on more to what they did last year. And obviously I'm referencing those rookie arms, the Growers and things like that. So that's a lot of things that have happened, but it takes a lot of things to happen to win a Miles Wolff Cup championship, especially in this league where there's not an easy place to play and not an easy series to win.
Fantastic. Jack Michaels, thanks for joining us.
Hey, you guys, it's always a treat. Hey, thanks, man. Anytime you call, you know I pick up for you, even if I just had a fettuccine Alfredo pasta.